From Indianapolis, 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is your WFYI Weekly News Roundup. The stage is set for the Indianapolis City-County Council to vote on a proposal that would expand Marion County's public transit system with a local tax increase. On Tuesday night, the Council's Rules and Public Policy Committee approved the plan. A majority of Marion County voters approved the proposal during a public referendum in last November's election. At the meeting on Tuesday night, Lawrence resident Chris Dunleavy, who is blind, said he supports the tax increase.
I rely upon public transportation to get to work. Without that, my options are incredibly limited. And so I ask that you pass this so that Indigo has the resources so that they can give us a vibrant and viable public transportation system so that we can be able to access all of the great things that Indianapolis has to offer.
But a number of concerns remain by those who oppose the plan, including Ted Plang, who lives on the north side around 66th and College.
Optimal routes for many low-income people will come late in the plan's implementation. There are no compelling local environmental studies, and the elimination of lanes of College, Meridian, and Capitol due to the elevated medians for buses will force heavy traffic and parking into residential neighborhoods.
There are still concerns about long-term funding for the plan. On Monday, Indianapolis's 10-Point Coalition, the group of community leaders and ministers who teach neighbors how to patrol their own streets, went to Muncie to help teach their method there. That city has seen an uptick in murders over the past few weeks. Also this week, the City of Indianapolis partnered with the Marion County Public Health Department to kick off a series of Narcan training classes for community providers. Narcan is a drug that can be administered to reverse an opioid drug overdose. The training sessions are for lay responders or people who have direct contact with people who are at high risk of drug overdose. This week's session was offered to homeless outreach providers. It's part of a citywide effort to tackle the root causes of homelessness, including addiction. WFYI's Lee DeNoon reports.
So far in 2017, Narcan has been used 316 times by Indianapolis first responders to reverse overdoses. Dr. Virginia Kane, director of the Marion County Public Health Department, says the next step is training the public to administer Narcan.
Partnering with a lot of community-based organizations like Horizon House, IMPD district offices, community centers, neighborhood associations, and residents to try to distribute these overdose rescue kits.
The trainings not only include instruction on how to administer the drug, but also on how to recognize an overdose. Pupils the size of a pinpoint, unconsciousness or extreme sleepiness, and shortness of breath. People interested in training can call the health department. For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Lee DeNoon.
In 2014, Indiana lawmakers established a task force to study neonatal abstinence syndrome, or opioid withdrawal, in newborns born dependent on the drugs. 20% of the sample set were born dependent on opioids. There are few resources for these women and infants. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports on efforts to help them through their recovery.
It was a few years ago when staff at Reed Hospital in Richmond, Indiana, noticed a trend.
We actually knew there was things going on because the nurses are very good about picking up on those things.
That's Director of Strategic Initiatives, Lisa Suttle.
Once we started doing the testing, it became very apparent that, we definitely have a problem.
Suttle says they started drug testing mothers in August of 2015, and by December, 41 women tested positive for opioids. Today in a dark, quiet room, a nurse is rocking a newborn that's being monitored for withdrawal symptoms.
Give him the snuggles that he needs.
Nurse Stephanie Nicholson says these infants have a hard time self-soothing.
It is something that we work hard to decrease their stimulation. Even with that, there's still babies that they just are constantly crying, and you can just tell they're in pain.
Richmond's Reed Hospital had to adapt quickly. Women and Children's Service Line Director Kelly Beal says they're seeing progress. Many of these infants are staying in the hospital for shorter periods of time. Beal credits interventions before delivery, including counseling and treatment.
That mom does not want to do this to their child. They don't want to do this to themselves. So it's almost like if someone on the other side who could be judgmental, who could give up on me, but they're the ones that are the biggest cheerleaders, I think that really helps moms feel like they can do it and they can be good moms and get over this addiction.
But there are only a few places for these women to get help in Indiana. This is widely acknowledged, and this legislative session, two bills were introduced to help fund and establish more resources. Fresh Start in Indianapolis, run by Volunteers of America, is one of the current centers. Executive Vice President Shannon Schumacher says the program is intensive.
The moms are in recovery, and they're also receiving parenting, 24/7 parenting classes, parenting interventions, real-time ways of her helping her child through. You can imagine newborns and how difficult that can be.
The women here were referred to this recovery center by the Department of Child Services, or DCS, because they have had previous cases.
That baby can be under our care when she's in treatment and doesn't have to go to foster care, doesn't have to have out-of-home placement, because believe me, if mom loses custody of that baby, the likelihood that she's going to have the motivation to quit at that point is very unlikely.
They only have 15 beds, and there are currently 80 women on the waiting list. Newborns and children under 5 can live here with their moms.
One of the amazing things in what we've seen is when the mom has her baby with her, the success rate is skyrocketing. We're seeing 61% of the women with their babies here, with their children here, are successfully completing the program.
And Schumacher says many of them in this Indianapolis clinic come from rural counties.
Just the need. I mean, when we go out and talk in the counties, it's devastating. Some of these towns are just devastated by this opiate epidemic, and particularly these moms with these young children. And people want help. They want to get better, and there's just not many options out there for them.
Schumacher has been working to expand services, and Fresh Start recently announced plans to open a new center in Winchester in eastern Indiana. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
Indiana State Police held a press conference on Wednesday in hopes that a clue left by one of the teenage victims of a double homicide in the Carroll County town of Delphi will lead to finding the girl's killer. The bodies of 14-year-old Liberty German and 13-year-old Abigail Williams were found on Valentine's Day, a day after they failed to return from a hike near the Delphi Historic Trail in Carroll County. Indiana State Police released an audio recording that was found on German's cell phone, a 3-second clip of a male voice saying, "Down the hill."
Down the hill. Down the hill. Down the hill.
Police say Liberty German recorded the clip shortly before she died. A previously released picture of a suspect wearing blue jeans and a blue jacket was also revealed to be from German's phone. The FBI is now assisting the state police with the search. FBI agent Greg Massa implores people to not rationalize away any hunches and to regard people's actions with suspicion.
Did this individual travel unexpectedly? Did they change their appearance? Did they shave their beard, cut their hair, change the color of their hair? The superintendent mentioned the clothes that this individual was wearing in the photo. Did they change the way they dress?
Officials say the voice could be from a different person than the man shown in the previously released photo. According to police, there is no telling if that person was local, knew the girls, or contacted them previously. The public is encouraged to submit any tips to the FBI or the state police. Tips can be anonymous. The police, using donations from local businesses and the FBI, are offering a reward totaling more than $40,000 for any information leading to the arrest. State police say they are choosing to not release any more information due to the risk of soliciting phony tips or assisting the murderer.
What do you wonder about Indianapolis?
Why did Pogues Run get buried underground?
Why are there so many potholes?
Who's in charge of synchronizing all the stoplights in town?
With Curious Indy, you can ask questions and help WFYI News decide what we should be reporting on next, and sometimes even be part of finding the answer. So, Curious Indy? Go to wfyi.org/curiousindy to find out more.
You're listening to WFYI's Weekly News Roundup. United Way of Central Indiana announced the first round of grant recipients for its Great Places 2020 initiative. The goal of the 5-year project is to help families become financially stable in 4 key Indianapolis communities. The first recipient of Great Places 2020 is the Edna Martin Christian Center. The Eastside facility provides social services for families in that neighborhood. It will receive $350,000. Ann Mertlow is president and CEO of United Way of Central Indiana. This year, the group is using a new method to select recipients. It's called the two-generation approach.
If you establish a neighborhood network of comprehensive integrated services that serve the whole family, then more children will enter kindergarten ready to learn. More parents will acquire the skills necessary to have career track jobs. And then the result is that more families can be financially stable.
Other recipients announced this week include the John Bonner Community Center, the Englewood Christian Church, and the East 10th United Methodist Children and Youth Center. United Way says it will announce a second round of grants this August. And the Boys and Girls Clubs of Indianapolis handed out its highest awards this week, the Youth of the Year.
It's about highlighting those kids who have really shown some extraordinary leadership skills, that have pulled themselves out of some very usually difficult circumstances. And it's a way of acknowledging and recognizing them.
Executive Director Rick Witten says the local club has a long history of helping Indianapolis kids.
The Boys and Girls Clubs of Indianapolis was one of the first 50 clubs in the country. And we're in our 124th year. So we've had a lot of young people come through our doors over those 124 years.
Selecting the Youth of the Year is an emotional experience for all involved.
We always have to bring out extra boxes of Kleenexes for our judges. It's very emotional. Some of these kids come from some really difficult circumstances, and to get to understand their grit and what it takes for them to get to where they're going, it's pretty amazing.
And the local winners will compete with other clubs to be selected as the State Youth of the Year. Meanwhile, dozens of Indianapolis area students from different high schools and different faiths are raising money to help school-aged children in Kenya graduate from high school. It's part of the Global Interfaith Partnerships Umoja Project. Their main fundraiser is tomorrow. It's called the Kenya Carnival. I went to one of their organizational meetings a few weeks ago to see why these students are so passionate about this cause.
Welcome. We're really glad you're here. Come find out what you want to do for the carnival, and you can see me with any questions.
Celia Boer is the Indiana Program Coordinator for Global Interfaith Partnership. She's one of only a few adults attending this organizational meeting. And that's exactly how she wants it.
Really, from the start, this project, Kenya Carnival, has been about bringing together students from different faith backgrounds, different schools, different congregations to work together for a common purpose. And we believe that as people of faith, we're all called to help others in need. And this project allows students to do that in a very tangible way, work with their friends, get to know other people, and help kids half a world away.
First, we'd like to recognize the different groups here. Let's start with the youth leadership team. So everybody, please stand.
Since 2008, students have been promoting, volunteering, and even creating the activities for the yearly Kenya Carnival that's held at Second Presbyterian Church.
One example would be our Carmel High School Kenya Club that wanted to do face painting. So they researched all these different face painting things and came up with ideas for making like elephant faces and lions, and they've become so good at it for several years that they even do that at other festivals as a fundraiser for us. They'll have a tip jar at another festival raising money for Kenya Carnival with their awesome face painting.
One of those Carmel High School volunteer students is 17-year-old Lainey Slack. She's been active in the carnival for many years, but last summer she took her volunteering one step further. She went to Kenya to visit the students that she's been raising money to help.
I was there for 2 weeks over the summer. We were living in the village, in a village called Kisumu County, for 2 weeks. Each day we visited different schools, the primary schools that we support. And we got to go to different students' homes. So we were going to on home visits, making sure that the students we sponsor, making sure that their needs are being met, and that all the things that they were promised initially as they became a student, sponsored student, we're making sure that all of their needs are met and that they're getting everything that we told them that we would give, and making sure that their family life is okay, and seeing their schools and meeting their teachers.
We work with the children who have lost one or both parents to HIV/AIDS and live in extreme poverty. Some of our students, as young as 10 or 12, may be heads of their household, responsible for feeding and caring for their younger siblings.
Definitely made me a much, I think, more grounded person, definitely more cautious about each day, about the things that I say and the things that I do, how I kind of see things, my perception about different things. And it's definitely made me more independent and more of a leader.
Ask your group members to sign up to volunteer. You can sign up online for a shift. Your parents can also volunteer too, so don't be shy from that. Also pick up the flyers and find out a way to promote Kenny Carnival, like in your schools or in your neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera. Break a leg.
The Kenya Carnival is Saturday, February 25th, from noon to 4 p.m., that's tomorrow, at Second Presbyterian Church at 7575 North Meridian Street. You can learn more about the activities at the carnival at kenyacarnival.com. Two screen prints of President Barack Obama from internationally known artist Russell Young are now on display at the Long Sharp Gallery in downtown Indianapolis. The works are part of the artist's Obama Legacy Portrait Series. It opens in New York next week. Young photographed Obama over the course of a few days in 2006. That's when the then-Illinois senator was making speeches in south-central Los Angeles.
He got up on the stage and, you know, was just talking, and I was, like, so impressed with how much he cared about people. We talked about his concerns and my concerns, but he had so much charisma.
Young said one image became the center for his series.
He took his jacket off, rolled up his sleeves. You know, I took quite a few photographs, but this one image really captured me. He was, you know, it was like he was almost praying. He's got his eyes down. He's, you know, he's in a moment. I just think it's a beautiful, I mean, it really captures who he is.
A portion of the sales of the prints will benefit charities supported by the Obamas, including Habitat for Humanity and Calvary Women's Services. The Long Sharp Gallery is located inside the Conrad Hotel in downtown Indianapolis. Gallery hours and an online view of the Obama Legacy Portrait Series are available at its website, longsharpgallery.com. You're listening to 90.1 WFYI's Weekly News Roundup. The Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra is getting some help from Ball State University to bring classical music to a younger crowd by holding a series of events in Fountain Square. Tonight, the project called Remix the Symphony will be at Cat Head Press from 6 to 8 p.m. That's where participants will mix music with art while they enjoy food and drinks. I attended one of the remix nights a few weeks ago where creative writing was the focus. This is not the music one normally hears when visiting a venue in Fountain Square on a Friday night. The DJ tonight is Ball State student McKay Powers. He's spinning tunes from the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra.
The more of the calm ones towards the beginning here, that usually is a typical thing you do. Just start out smaller, then you build your way up.
He and Emily Cornettit are part of a team of Ball State graduate students who are helping the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra get more young people interested in its classical music series.
Going out and talking to people, going out and talking to the audience that they want to connect with, and finding out, you know, what kind of art that they value and why they value and how they associate value with things, and then a ton of secondary research, so going out and finding out what other symphonies have been doing to try to solve the same problem, because this isn't a new problem, and it's not just a problem that they're having in Indianapolis. I mean, they're having this problem everywhere.
The students are taking part in a course offered by the Ball State University Center for Emerging Media Design and Development. Faith Kellermeyer manages the team.
We teach skills that are unique to our program. We teach design thinking. We teach our students how to work in groups and to problem solve in teams. And so we saw this as a good opportunity to connect those skills to an organization like ISO that's doing great work in the field of arts, and sort of best of both worlds for us.
The project is called Remix the Symphony.
We actually have four objectives that we're constantly measuring. So you'll see people tonight sort of like lurking around with clipboards, or maybe interviewing people. So we're measuring both things that are easy to see, like we have a promo code we're using, and we know that the more people who use it with the ISO, the more are coming from us. But we're also measuring perspective shifts, and that's really hard to measure, and really the only way you can do it is by talking to people. So we actually have people who are specific testers who interview participants to try and see if we move the needle maybe just a little bit.
That's team member Elise Lockwood.
Everything we do is themed around how you can remix or take classical music and interpret it in your own way. But we didn't want that to be limited just to musicians who take classical music and interpret it in their own musical style. So tonight, we are actually catering it towards writers. So we have classical music playing and a bunch of writing prompts if people want to use them, and we're inviting them to remix classical music into their writing style.
Ball State student Jared Lynch picked up one of those printed prompts, which are small cards with interesting ideas to help spur writing.
My prompt is, you've arrived at a very weird office party. The current music is what is being played. What is office party like? Who's there? What are they wearing? What food is offered? So then I just kind of went with that.
After reading the prompt and listening to the music, Jared put pen to paper.
Okay, so this might be kind of weird. Morty is wearing his goat sweater again. It's usually a sign that this office party will inevitably be a long night. Gwen is in charge of the turntable that's set up on the coffee table, stuck in between all the stained mugs that no one uses or washes, except for the wine benders late at night when we all agree to host an office party. And every time we swear we'll have a sober party. It begins that way, but when Gwen starts playing Debussy, Paul and Everly pulls out a bottle of Glenlivet, and then it all starts again, wasting away our minds with La Mer playing in the background and our landlord screaming at us from the apartment upstairs.
The writing from tonight's event, along with art from another, will be collected and presented as an online magazine at remixthesymphony.org. You've been listening to the WFYI Weekly News Roundup. Remember, you can get the latest news online anytime at our website, WFYI.org. I'll be back with more local news this afternoon during All Things Considered. Indiana Lawmakers with John Swanis is coming up next. I'm Jill Dittmeyer.